in a town, a small town, a small, quiet town in northern Pennsylvania. Something big is about to explode in the superhero action-packed event of the season. Pop's Culture Shop in Wellsboro, Pennsylvania presents Comic-Con 2023, August 12th and 13th. In the epic sequel, heroes will rise, warriors will reign supreme, and basically, everyone will have a really, really good time. Yeah! With amazing events, awe-inspiring special quests, fantastic food and fun, and yes, Batman returns. Be a superhero, or whatever hero you want to be, at the second annual Wellsboro Comic-Con 2023, August 12th and 13th. For tickets and more information, pop into Pop's Culture Shop or visit us online today at WellsboroComicCon.com. Don't miss it.
All right, podcastia, you're listening, right? It's Howard Stern here. And I got to tell you, I mean, Robin, I'm not really into podcasts.
Well, that's like all those people who used to be on cable access. Yeah. They thought they were
on TV.
Television.
They would pay a company to put my TV. Hey, look, I'm on TV. No, you're not on TV. I mean, yeah, you're on TV, but nobody gives a shit about you.
But Trenton Waves, it's not a podcast. This is a friggin' experience. Frank and Christina Sasso are the best. The best thing since Transcendental Meditation.
It's the official, unofficial podcast of the city of Trenton, New Jersey. With your host, Frank Ferocious Sasso.
Trenton still makes and the world still takes.
And Christina Firestarter Sasso.
Trenton is Mayberry with attitude.
Hang tight, because we're going to meet the lifeblood behind the culture, food, arts, music, pork roll, punk rock, hair, books,
education, talent, events,
of Trenton, New Jersey. Here's Frank and Christina.
Hello, podcast here. I come to you today with a public service announcement.
Me?
Well,
you come
and,
to me?
Well, podcast here.
Oh, okay.
I'm just happy to be talking to you.
Okay.
But I'm talking to...
What is it?
We're in the supermarket,
mm-hmm.
and you know those things, those plastic bars that you think go in between the food as like a barrier so someone's cherries don't come into your stuff? You know those little plastic things?
Yes,
they sometimes
dividers.
Have advertisements on
it. People call them, I guess, dividers.
Yeah, they're not dividers.
Okay.
They're not meant to divide your products from someone else's.
Mm.
That's not what they're for. How do you normally put one of those things down on the conveyor belt?
Before I got the reprimand.
Yeah? What does that mean, for me?
Yes.
Okay.
I used to put it perpendicular to the conveyor.
This is hard to explain because it's an audio show.
Right.
Perpendicular to the
conveyor.
Meaning,
if the food is going from north to south, I'm putting the conveyor east to west.
Oh, God. That doesn't help me.
You get it.
I don't need your help, guest, okay? I'm talking to my wife. That's what this show is about. Me talking to my wife and you're in the way. All right. So here's what it's meant to do. It's all about... What's the matter? Tell me the problem.
I've heard so many times.
Yeah, here's the thing. Until America gets it, they're going to keep hearing it, which includes you. I've had many a cashier thank me for explaining this to the clientele.
Although the clientele were not appreciative.
I don't care. I don't care about
Nobody
the clientele.
Nobody wanted to know.
I don't care. So it goes parallel to the conveyor. Parallel.
Mm-hmm. North, south, north, south.
North, south?
Yeah, in the same direction.
If the conveyor is going north and south, then the bar should be going north and south. If the conveyor is going east and west, the bar should be going east and west, that little plastic thing.
Yes.
Here's
yes.
why. Because it's long for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's so that the sensor at the end of the belt can pick up that there's no more product there and it stops the belt. It's not there to divide your order from Sally Smith's order or Wakiqua's order Mr. Lee's order. I'm trying to get every ethnic group that I can.
Listen, but people in not knowing this.
Yeah.
It just seems logical that it would be just a barrier.
Because it has to be about them.
No, because it's never been explained. So if people are left to their own devices, they're going to go with the most logical thing. Let's say, oh, this is a little stick. It's supposed to delineate that person's purchases from my purchases.
Mm. It's all about the cash register person.
I know, but people have no idea about that.
Well, here I come along trying to help.
I know.
And people get
all
pissed off at me.
I know.
And one woman, I put it down the right way.
It's like a battle of wills.
And she picked it up and changed it. And then I put it right back.
And then he put it back and she put it back. And then I'm like, really?
She didn't have to touch my bar. She didn't have to touch my bar. It's all about.
Is it your bar or her bar?
It's my bar. Oh, and I'm just about to explain why. It's all about the person who's next putting down the bar the correct way.
Okay.
To help out the cashier.
Okay, so you hear that out there, consumers?
Yeah.
If you care to get into this battle, like you have nothing else to be.
No, it's not a battle. This is how you do it,
damn
it.
To be on a soapbox about
America.
If this is all America had to worry about, wow, we would be great.
No, there's something else they have to worry about, too. I just found out about this.
Oh, no.
I saw this guy.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of a gold digger?
Oh, my God.
This is amazing to me. There are people out there, women mostly, who will go and they'll date a guy just because of his money.
Wow. Really?
He could be ugly. He could be handicapped. He could be, you know, if they think
he has money. You realize
this
has happened since the dawn of time.
They're called gold diggers.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a guy on YouTube.
We all know it. Everybody knows it.
There's a guy on YouTube. He tries to pick up women, right?
Yes.
And he goes, hey, how you doing over there?
And he's not attractive, as we would say.
Not attractive. Okay. But, you know, the girl's like all buxomy and blonde and whatever. The whole look, the tight clothes, whatever.
Right.
And he tries to ask her, he's like, hey, can I have your name, your number? And she's like, not interested, clearly not interested.
Mm-hmm.
So as he's walking away from her, he gets into his Lamborghini that you don't see is there because the camera pans out. And as he's getting in, the girl all of a sudden, oh, is this your car? And he's like, oh, yeah. And all of a sudden, she's all nicey nice. And it's a video to catch what's known as gold diggers.
And you've never heard of Dean Martin and his gold diggers.
I never heard of that.
I'm dating myself.
I never heard of gold diggers ever. I never heard of the phrase ever.
Have you heard of gigolos? Or isn't that the male version?
Well, gigolo is, I've heard that from Van Halen. So I knew what that was. David Lee Roth.
Okay. Well, it's the same thing, but on the male end.
Podcasty, I just want to warn you. If you're a guy with money and you're ugly and you got nothing going for you but money, be on the lookout for what's called these gold diggers. They're women who will go out with you just to get her hands on your money. Gold diggers.
Thank you for that.
What are you? Analysis. Why is she looking at me like that? What am I? Am I really? Don't. How am I not?
Because this is something that everyone already knows. Every single person you've asked about this,
yeah,
like you just found out some mystic secret. Every single person has said, yeah, I've heard of that. And you still go on with the explanation.
No, I find it fascinating.
Okay.
How have I never heard of this term?
I don't know. You live kind of a sheltered life.
I mean, you know I'm your husband, right?
Yes.
You still think I live a sheltered life?
Yes.
Really?
No, I don't think you do live one.
You just said that.
Because you're married to me.
But you just said I live a
sheltered
life. Oh, lived.
Growing up.
ED.
Yes.
Past tense.
Yes. This is a public service announcement for people who are living under rocks. You need to get out of your rock. You need to get out of your comfort zone and experience the
right.
world.
You hear that? Get out of your rock.
I didn't say get out of your
you
rock.
Just
get
said
out from
you
under.
You need to get out of your rock.
All right. Can we move on now?
We had the wonderful Maria Richardson on recently.
Yes.
And Brandon Garcia, city clerk.
Yes.
He was a lot of fun.
Yes.
I would actually like to play a little clip from Jorge,
okay,
who was on the show with him.
Okay.
This is from Jorge, the clerk typist who works with Brandon Garcia in the city clerk's office.
Is that his official title?
His official title?
Yeah, is he a clerk? I thought the clerk typist was the one at the...
No, that's a court typist.
Oh.
Oh, no.
You blew it away.
No.
What?
Damn it. It's gone. Okay, forget that, podcast. Yeah. I'm not going to do that.
What a tease.
This show. Okay, so in the meantime, we have somebody very, very... I will say this. She's very... Oh my God. Why do the guests think I need their help? I don't really remember how we met. I think it was since the Robin Vaughn, Kathy McBride cartoons that hit the paper. I think that was the kind of like what got us started talking.
I feel like we've known each other longer than that, but I don't know.
No, we didn't. We don't know. Right. Anyway, so she's very, very sweet at first.
Oh.
And then you start seeing this very controversial, like, in-your-face thing come out, which I'm not a fan of. Because I don't want to get on this woman's bad side. I'll tell you that right now.
Okay.
She's a force to be reckoned with.
Okay.
She just recently got her PhD. So she is now a doctor. On top of all this, now you have the words doctor in front of her name. That's right. Dr. Evangeline Dean joins us today in the studio. She's here with us right now. Hello, Dr. D.
Hello. Hello.
Do you prefer Angeline or Dr. D?
Yeah, because it's not Evangeline. It's Angeline.
I keep saying Evangeline.
I know.
Why do I say that?
Why are you trying to make me that?
Why do I say Evangeline?
It's not even spelled that way, is it? It's
not at all.
It's with an A, right?
It's with an A.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
The wrong vowel.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you look at it and then put that in your head? Maybe that'll help you.
It's just more things for me to do.
Oh.
I'm just being honest.
I know. Reading.
Hello, Angeline.
Hi. Anyway,
hello. Do you prefer Dr. D or Angeline?
Listen, I've been called worse than either of them.
No, I'm not asking.
Whichever's
Listen,
getting
I'm asking
gonna
you.
I'm going to say Angeline. I think that's a beautiful name.
You think that's what
name.
She prefers?
Thank
you think that's a beautiful name?
Yeah, I do.
Really? Mm-hmm. What about Dean? Hey, Dean.
Like for a guy?
No, for her.
No. No. Never.
Ms. Dean?
If I was maybe a student.
Okay.
Or, yeah.
I call it Dr. D. It's just, I like that.
Okay, do what you need to do.
Thank you.
As long as it's okay with you.
So I can talk now?
Yay!
Yes. Okay,
yay!
Okay. I want to, you know. No, hey, I'm
please.
In your house.
I want
don't
okay.
get her,
you
don't
talk.
Get her started.
I want to get her started. So first question, why Trenton?
I didn't choose Trenton. I was sent to Trenton.
Okay.
And that's what I say all the time. Growing up, living in South Jersey, I would have my friends who would go school shopping up here. They love the clothes and all of that. I would always go up North Jersey. So I learned about Trenton from a friend in school, coming here, going shopping, supporting Trenton, right, as we were in high school. And then traveled and did all kinds of things. And so it wasn't until after my grandmother passed, once she transitioned, I took over a year just because I was a mess. Mm-hmm. And it was this one job that I saw in the paper. And when I read it, I was like, oh my God, that's everything about me.
Mm-hmm.
The job said, it was an activist job. And the job said that most of my time would have been spent in Camden, which was cool because I used to live in Camden and work in Camden. And then it says several hours would be in the city of Trenton. So I was like, okay, that's fine too. And so fast forward, what the gentleman who had the position in Trenton wind up leaving quicker than the organization thought he was going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, again, that was going to put me in Camden because there were other organizers and activists there. And so I was first assigned to Kingsbury Towers. I was going there, doing work there.
Mm-hmm.
And when he left, they offered me the position.
Oh, wow.
And so that's how I wound up in the city of Trenton. So I always say I was sent here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I chose it.
Okay. So did you live here now?
No.
So you still live in South. We're mm-hmm. more central, I guess, central Jersey.
Yes.
Okay, so you're in South Jersey. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned Kingsbury. Well, before we get on that, so mm-hmm. what do you, when you say an activist, what does that mean? Like what?
I say that.
As a job. I mean, I know people mm-hmm. are activists and they protest and they write letters and things like that, but what was mm-hmm. the job?
So first of all, I never even knew that an organizer activist was a job.
Oh, okay.
Right? I really didn't because I grew up. My grandmother was known for having over 200 foster children that come through her home in the state of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't including the community kids.
Mm-hmm.
When I would go to my grandmother's house, you know, at home, we locked the doors. At my grandmom's house, we didn't lock the doors.
Mm.
And so I saw people coming in all the time. My grandfather's father left him property, left him land. And so my grandmother, who I always say was really the first PhD holder because she was about, I say, physically healing the disenfranchised and physically healing her own dear ones and mm-hmm. teaching us that we were no better, right? And we were no less than.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would have to go, as young kids, we're like, oh my God, we got to go to the poor folks stand again. Like, that's what we would say, right? Because she would get these, I'm serious, right? We're kids, right? So we would see bruised fruit and all. She would put that in the bag. They could cut around that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what she would say to us. Mm-hmm. And then when we would come home, the people who own these markets and stuff, they took very good care. Like, they made sure that my grandmother had bags and bags of stuff. So then when we came home, we had to separate it, the kids, mm-hmm. and then we had to disperse it to the neighborhood. Then as time moved on, my grandfather owning his own company, he was a trucker. And a lot of times he would do some work with like ShopRite and other food stores. So then they were giving him things. Mm-hmm. And so then my grandmother had him convert the whole garage, right? So now the garage became a supermarket. The garage wow. became a clothing store. My mm-hmm. uncles were cutting wood, right? So that people would have wood for their furnaces in the winter time. Mm-hmm. And so again, to me, this is just what you did. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was a job. Mm-hmm. So when I saw this advertisement, like I remember going to my dad and I was like, yo, read this. And my dad was like, well, that's what you do. Mm-hmm. You applying for it? And I was like, yeah, I think I will. And I did. And so for me, the activist was making people aware of policies, making people aware of their rights, mm-hmm. making people aware that they too have a voice, mm-hmm. That they are human, that they have a right, that government works for them. They don't work for government. Mm-hmm. And so that when I say activist, that's what I mean. And mm-hmm. so how can I support? I don't always like speaking for the people. It is my hope and my heart that the people will get to a place where they will have a voice of their own. Mm-hmm. But if I have to do it until they get there, then I don't have that problem either. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when you applied for that job, did you have any, I'm doing air quotes, mm-hmm. education or diploma in that area?
No, I had all life experience.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So just so you hear that out there, you don't always have to have mm-hmm. the degree and the certificate to do something that you're good at. Wow. I know I'm talking to myself here, but you have a passion for it. Mm-hmm. You're good at it. It's all you knew growing up. Mm-hmm. Why aren't you qualified to do that? Of course.
Right. And I so agree. And I'm glad that you said that, because even though I tell people, even though I have my PhD, it does not make me appear mm-hmm. in your down here, right? I'm also a PK times two. So I know what it's like to, I tell people I've been in the crack house and I've been in the White House. Mm-hmm. So
wait a minute, a PK times two? What's a PK times two?
A pastor's kid times two.
Oh, okay. Pastor's kid.
Why times two?
Because my mom and my dad are pastors.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so I know what it's like to be in communities. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to be in the trenches, right? Mm-hmm. I also know that, and I have seen and sat and talked with people living under bridges, that if they opened their mouth, you'd swear they had the PhD. Mm-hmm. And they could tell you things and how to do things and how to operate things. So yeah. I'm glad that you said that. Even with the job in me getting the job in Trenton, there were other organizers that had been there longer. And that was one of my concerns that I said to the people, like, I'm not coming in here to start with the people I work with. I'm coming to work for the other folks. Right. And they said, no, the people from Kingsbury asked that it be you that got the job.
Oh, so really?
That's how.
So they already knew you over there.
I was already working there while he was in, you know, the person that was assigned.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I was coming several hours a week. I wasn't mm-hmm. doing full time. Mm-hmm. Most of my time was in Camden, but I did have to come to Trenton. Mm-hmm. And then that's how I wound up showing up.
Okay.
Yeah, Angeline is definitely a force to be reckoned with.
Well, that's cool. We need more people like you.
And did you guys talk before today? Because
no,
you just did the air quotes thing and you said I'm doing air quotes, and she just recorded her show and said the same exact thing.
Well, it's an audio show. So
no, but she even said I'm doing air quotes. And I'm like, what are they, like, hook up on the phone or something?
Yeah,
and
so we're going to do air quotes today.
I say her show because Angeline has a new show on the Newport City Podcast Network. Yes. Called Unapologetically, not just free, but free indeed. And the deed in indeed is like real estate deed.
Right.
That kind of deed.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Very, well, very interesting stuff.
I listened to the one with Stephanie Register
mm-hmm.
and a little bit of Eric Poe, because we had Eric on the show. And what he was saying, he also said on the show about the insurance, which mm-hmm. I had never known. That was amazing.
Yes.
See, these are things that people need to know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because when you get that kind of knowledge, then you can get wisdom. Knowledge is, mm-hmm. is good. Knowledge is a good thing, but you have to apply wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Knowledge by itself is just a bunch of facts.
That's right.
But then now you can apply wisdom to what you know to mm-hmm. be true.
Word.
Mm-hmm. So, yes. Mm-hmm. And I never knew, well, I knew about it, but I'm saying until, I don't know how many years ago, I didn't know about redlining.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Didn't know it. I grew up in New York, you know. Even here, well, we fought some stuff here in Trenton about it wasn't redlining or anything like that. It was just development that we had to fight. But I often think about New York and having just been on it. What was it?
Oh, the Cross Bronx Expressway.
Driving through the Bronx,
mm-hmm.
sitting in traffic,
mm-hmm.
and thinking, wow, this was a neighborhood that they just said, yeah, we need someplace for cars to go. Right. So bye. Goodbye, everybody. And like, it was a neighborhood. It was a community. Mm-hmm. And it just disappeared.
Very Robert Moses way of thinking.
Well, it was Robert Moses.
Yeah,
yes.
It was him.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Sure. But
and the same happened here in the city of Trenton. I'm trying to think of the book. It was a woman's dissertation.
Well, it was 29.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and I'm sure
and the whole Coalport area, what happened all over there.
Where was that?
The Coalport area here. There's a big conversation now around Coalport? The whole Coalport area. Over there, like, it's more the north section.
Of Trenton?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Wow, 20 years ago, I still don't know what that is. This is the first time I'm hearing about this.
There's a lot we don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot we don't know.
We don't know, yeah, yes. Yeah. But talking about Kingsbury, that's like a big issue now. Are you involved in any of that now?
It really breaks my heart when I hear about what's happening with Kingsbury, because it was the same things that we were telling all of government that was happening. When I was there, the elevators weren't working. When I was there, people were dying. When I was there, it was still a lot of what was going on. I was still questioning the board to include the board of members who were from the city of Trenton, who saw what was going on. When I started hearing about it more recently, all I could do was shake my head because this is not new.
I was going to say, this is something you've been talking about for how many years, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. At least 10.
Yeah.
At least 10.
Yeah. How much worse now, 10 years later?
Absolutely. Right?
Things don't usually get better if you just let them.
Right.
You
know, that's right.
Hey, it'll just fix itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm a fan of taking the whole thing down.
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand that there are people living there. But I don't like the idea of them living there the way it is.
Right. So I think that's a part of the problem, right? Or the concern.
Mm-hmm.
That these people are not displaced.
Right.
Right. And so I don't know where they would go, how, or are they going to do it in segments, you know, and then maybe move a set amount and then come back and do another portion or.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Yeah. I have no idea.
Being a property owner, I love property. I think I inherited it from my dad. And for me, it's the way to get wealth.
Yes.
Which is part of what you're.
Yes.
You're talking about on your show.
Mm-hmm.
I do not understand how someone can own a property and have the nerve to rent it when it looks as if it should be
demolished.
When we get our properties ready to be rented, I imagine myself living there.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be a lovely home. Like, someone's going to come here, make a home. They're going to hang their pictures. They're going to move their furniture and they cook their meals here. Like, I want them to have a home and have happiness here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how you could allow someone to live on your land where it's not up to par.
So you have a heart, right?
It's infuriating to
me. Yes. You have a heart. And it's funny that Frank was talking about gold diggers, but government to me is the ultimate gold digger.
I agree.
And, you know, it's not just women going after these men. It's power coming after those who don't have power.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at why would they care if they don't care about the people and all they're caring about is the money that they're going to be able and they're not getting slapped with any type of sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And look at Kingsbury now. Now they want the government. They want the city to pay for. Right.
Gotta be kidding me.
That's a set that I can't.
Yes.
That's huge. Like, how dare you ask?
Those are titanium.
The very people.
Yes.
That you're screwing over to now kind of. Mm-hmm. Fund your mess up.
But this has been going on for years, right? Like, this is not new. So these are the systems that I talk about on the show. When we look at ghettos, right? And ghettos versus enclaves. Who were the ones that lived in the ghettos and who were the ones that were who really lived in ghetto-like conditions, but they weren't called ghettos and they weren't called that for a reason. So when you look at even how African American fathers were taken out of the home through policy of the women and their children who lived in the ghettos. They still had to pay the rent. They weren't doing anything in their community. They were having the highways go through it, trash everywhere, because they were considered less than. And then they had the nerve on top of that to say that if the father lives in the home, we won't give you a check. So people don't, you know, like, that's why I have these conversations, because these are the policies that were put in place. And then they're put in place to give you an idea of people, or who certain people are, or tell you about characteristics of certain people, right? That whole indoctrination and that whole socialization of society.
Listen, I remember when I was teaching back in the 90s, there was one teacher who was all about, like, conspiracies. Mm-hmm. And his thing was, like, who killed JFK and, you know, this and that and all that. And I'd be like, oh, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. I am so a conspiracy person now, because I think that is a concerted plan to keep certain people here, and everybody's being manipulated. You need to get out of being manipulated.
Yes.
You've got to get out of the system. You've got to create your own.
I'm going to tell you, I'm so glad you said that, because I just watched this movie on Stars. Mm. It's called 88. You have got to go watch it.
Okay.
The executive producer, and it's funny because Frank and I were just talking about Charlamagne Tha God on Breakfast Club.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I was saying, I'm going to be on the Breakfast Club once you watch my dissertation and all this kind of stuff.
I will speak that with you.
Please, right? So I said, but then somebody sent me last week, they said, you got to watch this movie because these are some of the things that you talk about, right? These systems, how they are designed to keep us all at each other, to keep up the distraction for the 1% that are really running this country and the power of this country. And that movie, 88, you got to watch it.
Okay.
I think
that guy, William Fitcher, is in that. That guy we like.
If you I know saw him, I don't. Know, yeah. People need to wake up. I feel like people keep saying, oh, woke. What? I think I had a dream about that last night. But anyway, I always say people who are woke are actually, I think, in a coma. Don't go along with what people are saying about this, and find out for yourself. Wake up for yourself and find out what is truth and not what you're being fed. Okay. I do believe we're being distracted. We're trying to be distracted by whatever, and you know, people fighting here and people here, and the media feeding you certain information, and this media versus that media, and social media. I think it's all designed to keep us distracted.
I agree with that.
Like, don't look at the man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Right.
What he's doing. Just look over here at the dancing bear, you know.
Yeah, I'm telling you, when you see that movie, it's just what we're talking about. And I was looking at it from an activist, because my mom and I have been having these conversations for years. This is where really, like, my spirituality comes in, because it's so messed up and it's so entrenched that you could think this person right here was your friend, and in the movie, like, they was one of them. Right? So you don't even know, like, who's around you. And so even from starting this show, based upon my dissertation, I talk about how in activism, I was used to white supremacy and white people and being treated a different way. When I got to school, and it wasn't that I was naive, that I believed that Zora Neale Hurston says that all your skin folk ain't your kin folk, right? So I knew that. And when Dr. Eddie Gloud reminded me of that when I was going, I'm like, why is he reminding me of that? But I dealt with white supremacy from a international black, biracial. I had the whole gamut. And then, you know, I was sitting there like, why did this have to happen to me, right? Like, I know there's a reason that I needed to see this. And then again, fast forwarding, watching the movie, like, all these thoughts were just coming back and coming back. And I remember in school, they used to say to us, do you want to reform the system or blow it up? And I was like, I don't think the system can be reformed.
I was going to say, let's blow it up.
And that was always my answer. So blow that mother up.
Oh, my God.
We're going to blow that mother
up.
up.
And she's a pastor's kid times two. So
that's right. Oh God, you don't even want to get my. Sometimes my mom and dad would be like, "Where are the exits?" Because we don't know what she's going to say.
Where are the exits?
Yeah,
especially on a plane.
Do you ever preach at your family's church?
I preached it all around.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're a believer?
Yes.
Okay. I know what you're saying is like, that's where wisdom comes from. My wisdom comes from. Mm-hmm. It's like you see things, but you got to say, what I'm seeing doesn't mean it's true. You know?
Yes.
Walk by faith and not by sight. Use wisdom like mm-hmm. to see what's really happening here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then we could reach out to Brandon Dixon and Notori Norton's people from 88 and see if we can get them on your show.
Are they the producers?
I would love to.
They play the Jacksons. They play. They're in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Interesting.
It was phenomenal.
Okay. All right,
because no, seriously. Because and they did it from the point of having a black president.
Oh.
Oh, really?
So it's a fictional.
It's fictional, but it's real. Yes.
Or is it?
Yes.
See where she goes. So this show of yours, this unapologetically not just free but free indeed, mm-hmm. it's to empower the black communities, or is it about like, you know, how white people are evil, or how does this, what is this really all about? Is it about white people are evil? Because I don't like that narrative, being a white person.
I just told you I went through white supremacy from a biracial, a black, and an international.
But then you said, dealt with white people.
No,
too,
I don't think you understand what she's saying by that. Can you explain that? When white supremacy through black
people?
I went
through trauma. I went through violence. Okay. It was a few of the white folks. But because of my background, I was accustomed to dealing with that, right? I was accustomed to dealing
with. So you knew that as the norm?
Absolutely.
All right. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't accustomed to having my own come for me. When I tell you, they fought me for 5 months. I defended March of that year. Two of the people that looked like me on my committee, I call them Jim Crow James. And
oh my goodness.
See what I mean?
Because.
Very diplomatic.
I'd rather be honest here than just like beat around the bush.
She makes me look diplomatic.
Oh boy. Okay.
And the sad part about it too, like this man was a pastor.
Yeah.
And so I kept, so my thought process when I was done with watching what he was doing and the hypocrisy of who he was in my prayer time, I was like, wow, God, how can he set people free when he's not even free himself?
Okay.
Yes.
Right. And then another time, the biracial woman who I called Cain, right? Because I said she will slew her brother for a dollar and some power.
Mm.
One time she was saying, Angeline, you know, when you're in these PhD programs, we bring you in here to pour everything out of you and pour everything new into you. I'm like, that's the banking system that they just told us about. But I said to her, I said, I'm going to tell you like this. I don't know what you guys, your agenda is, and it really doesn't matter to me.
Right.
I know I'm being sent here because I have to learn what does it mean to be not just free, but free indeed. Is this just about empowering black people? No. Everybody needs to know. That's why we're talking about the hidden behind the scenes. But this stuff started with white supremacy. This stuff started with enslavement here in this country.
Absolutely. I understand what you're saying. I mean, I only ask this because, as you know, I'm a racist.
That's what they say on the street.
Yeah, so whatever. What so, of course, it's true. I'm a racist. Yeah.
Yes.
Most of the people we hang out with are black, but we don't even know about that. Anyway.
You're not supposed to say that because that's what you would say.
Whatever. Yeah, because that's what I would. Exactly.
All my friends are black. No.
Yeah, all my friends are black. That's what. Yeah, right? I think. Right? Yeah, you would say that, wouldn't you?
Does that make this
white person evil now too? I mean, come on.
Oh dear.
But you came to Newport City. We're hosting your show. Well, matter of fact, by the way, podcast, at the end of this interview, you're going to hear the first episode of Unapologetically Not Just Free But Free Indeed. Immediately following this interview, it's actually an interview with Stephanie Register, who's a spitfire. This girl's out of control. I love Stephanie Register. You hear that, Stephanie? Love you.
Come on the show.
Yeah. We should get her on the show. The heck with Angeline.
No.
We should get Stephanie Register on the show. That's right. Close your mouth over there.
And she goes, I know.
I know.
The heck with Angeline. No.
I know.
Not at all. Not at all. Did you ask me a question? I forgot. You said, because I'm a racist.
Because I'm a racist.
Yeah.
I want to let you guys know that after this show, we're playing this, the first episode of
our podcast. Right, right. Now, I've been accused of being, well, we've been accused of being slumlord racist.
Slumlord racist millionaires. That's us. Slumlord racist millionaires.
Whatever. Yes,
that's us.
That's fine.
That's it. That's on the nose. Perfect.
Okay.
We have to get into a little something we call plugs.
Oh, not yet.
Yes, yet. It's the yet time.
No.
Angeline, would you like to hang around for a little something
so
we call
talk about.
Plugs?
Sure.
Trenton Waves Plugs.
Hey, Podcastia, let's see what this guest has to plug.
Trenton Waves, TrentonWaves.com. Visit us on all social media platforms, including but not limited to Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and TikTok. Okay, so as you heard in the beginning of the show, Wellsboro Comic-Con is back August 12th and 13th in 2023. Starts Saturday 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Sunday noon to 5 p.m. in Wellsboro, Pennsylvania. If you go to WellsboroComicCon.com, you can get your tickets there. You could also follow Wellsboro Comic-Con on Instagram. And you could see me. I'm going to be Batman again. But
okay.
This time I'm wearing the 1992 Batman Returns suit as opposed to the suit from Ben Affleck. Because that suit was way too heavy and intense.
I am just commanding the weather to be beautiful and not humid because last year Frank lost his weight in water.
I lost 13 pounds that weekend.
Oh my God. I mean, it wasn't hot. Thank God it wasn't hot. But it was a beautiful sunny day.
Yes, it was nice.
But you had to judge that contest where there was like, I'm thinking there was like 100 people that had costumes. They had him on a platform in the beating sun.
Wrapped in rubber from head to toe.
Wrapped in rubber from head to toe. God. And he was just dripping.
The
so.
Suit peeled off of me, literally.
It was disgusting. But anyway, so it's going to be a little different this time. There will be a costume judging contest.
Yeah, it won't be as intense.
It won't be, and you're not judging it this time.
I'm not judging it. Totally, no.
Okay. But, and it will be inside, correct?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. All right.
I know this much.
Yes.
That I was at, you know, Quayshawn Williams, Mannequin?
Yes, I do.
Very own Trenton
very
fashion
talented.
Designer.
Yes.
Was just on the second season of Next in Fashion on Netflix.
Yes,
I was at
was.
His studio this morning, and he was working on my Batsuit. So on my new one. So I have the hands of the master himself working on my Batsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff that he's doing to this suit, let me tell you what. Mm-hmm. You think I looked good last year.
He's super
this
talented.
Year, you're not going to be able to control yourself physically when you look at me. I'm telling you right now.
Please don't.
I'm going to tell you right now. You see how she's laughing, but really she's yearning is what that laugh is coming from.
Yes, it's from my yearning.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to be involved with a lot of strangers. You can't have your hands all over me.
Okay,
At least not there in public.
I'll do my best.
All right, I appreciate that. I have to maintain a certain level of professionalism.
But Quayshawn is a very talented guy. You took some pictures from his studio, and I was like, ooh, I like that dress. Tell me what size that dress
is. So I made the mistake of just like sending her a little, you know, text or a picture of where I am. Next thing I know is involving a dress sale now.
I'm like, checking out this dress.
Yes.
I'm like, I like glittery dresses.
Yes, you do. All right, so what plugs do you have?
I am not ready for plugs.
I am sorry, but the clock says we're ready for plugs. So,
see, Angeline, you're going to have to do a part deux and come on again.
Oh, before we get into plugs, wait a minute. I got a bone, I got
now
a bone
we're not in plugs
to
anymore.
Pick with Angeline.
Uh-huh.
She accused us of cowarding down in a recent interview.
Oh, what was that?
And I said, cowarded down? Really? Wow. Doesn't even read that text. The next text is, good morning. Okay, I want to come into the studio. What time do you have on them on Monday? Like, hey, what about the cowarded down message? How dare you? What does that mean?
So from what I heard when you were speaking with that person, I felt like you should have really said more and said how you felt.
But don't you understand the spirit of this show? We're not some kind of controversial, rip the lid off of...
We really just want to try and keep it positive.
Yeah, as much as we can.
So I will sometimes defer to some guests just because I want to hear what they have to say, and everyone's entitled to their opinion or their position or whatever. And, you know.
Yeah, so what I said was, you knew what they were saying wasn't right.
Yeah.
Right? And I was like, well, it's your show. The way you talk to people, you should be able to say, well, I don't agree with that.
Don't tell me what I should do.
And then to me, I don't think that that was being controversial. I think that was you hearing that person mm-hmm. and then you responding mm-hmm. back to that person. Mm. And I say that because sometimes some of those people need to see that others will say things and others are not afraid to disagree with them.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I think that disagreement is a very healthy thing.
I do too.
If it can be done where it's a discussion and an agreement at the end to say, look, we might part ways. We might or might not be friends, mm. but mm-hmm. it's okay. I don't hate mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
And I'll respect your position even if I disagree. Why can't that be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And with that, I accept your apology. No problem. We have plugs, though. What do you have in plugs?
Okay, well, it's just a couple of things I shared on social media. One of my favorite local artists is Kenneth J. Lewis Sr., and he's doing a free youth event at Trenton Free Public Library on Saturday, August 12th. Yes, August is coming, wow. and then quickly okay. September, and then summer's over.
Huzzah, yay! Huzzah.
Yes.
But so Saturday, August 12th at 11 a.m., and I think if you go on his social media page, his Kenneth J. Lewis Sr., you'll find more information, or KJL Art Sanctuary. And then there's also a block party at the New Jersey State Museum on Saturday, July 29th at 4 o'clock. And we have the Trenton Puerto Rican Parade Sunday, August 6th at 12, and Trenton Women's Gathering July 29th. And that is at a cost of $5. And of course, an event that always happens here in the area, Jersey Fresh Jam 2023, New Jersey's premier hip hop festival, Saturday, August 19th from noon to 7 at TerraCycle Way, and Cadwalder Park Yoga, Yoga in the Park, Sunday, August 13th. I believe, check this out, because it says 3, but I think that's a typo. I believe it's at noon, so I'm almost positive it's at noon, so okay. definitely check that out. So those are just some wonderful things that are happening in and around town. Don't forget Fun Fitness Tuesdays. It's not just me teaching. I'm just teaching a few classes on those Tuesdays. July 18th, there's going to be a Zumba class with Vin.
Oh, hello, Vin's going to be teaching.
Queen
okay.
of Zumba, friend of ours that I've known for many, many years. She is an amazing Zumba instructor.
Yeah,
I
talk
mean,
about
she's traveled the world teaching the program, so she is a pro. She'll deliver a really good class. And that's going to be at Unity Square Park at Hamilton and Chestnut Avenue. I will be on Tuesday, July 25th, doing strength and flex. And then there's certainly other ones coming up in August. And that is going to be various places in the city of Trenton. But if you go on to the Trenton website, you'll find it. Tuesday Fun Fitness 2023. And it starts at 6 p.m. on Tuesday and it runs for an hour. And you don't have to have any kind of previous experience. Just come. You could be at any fitness level to do any of these classes.
Right. But don't stand in front of you like eating chips, which we've had.
That's happened to me. I was teaching.
I'll never forget that. We were both doing it.
We were both teaching at the Y in Philly. Shout out to Christian Street Y. I love them over there. They do a great job. One day we were teaching and there was one person standing there in street shoes.
In the first row.
Street clothes, like moving a little bit, but eating a bag of potato chips. I'm like,
she wasn't moving a little bit. She was swaying back
well,
and forth while
she was moving
eating,
a little bit.
Eating potato chips.
And we just, you know, being from the school of don't stop performing, just keep going.
Right.
The
show
we just
must go
kept
on.
Going. The show must go on. She didn't stay for the whole class. But
no, thank God. Because
it was interesting. Well, it gave us something to talk about.
All right. Angeline, where can people find you? Where can people know you? Where can people see you? Where can they go online to experience all things Dr. Angeline Dean?
Yes.
That's right. Doctor, everybody. Yes. How cool is that?
That is.
Oh, they like that. All right. All right. Very good.
We love it.
Oh, gosh. So on Facebook, it's Angeline, quote, Angie Dean. That's what they used to call me.
Quote?
Angie Dean.
Is quote yeah, lines like, in the
quote,
address?
Angeline, quotes around the word Angie Dean.
Okay.
Then.
So when you type it into Instagram, you got to type in a quote.
Facebook. When oh. you put Angeline.
Right.
And then you put Angie in quotes. Okay. Dean.
I've never heard in the history of doing this show, as well as just conversations I've had with people in life, I've never, ever, this is the first time I've heard someone saying that you have to type in quotes in the Facebook search bar.
Well, if you want to find me, that's how it's written. Mm-hmm. You're learning a lot lately. Yeah,
why are you taking that position?
A
She first folded things. Her arms and everything.
Oh listen, God, I know I'm an evil right. white man, but that is not called for.
So that's on Facebook. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn is Dr. Angeline Dean. Twitter, I think, is Angeline Dean.
What's Instagram?
That one I'm not really on that a lot.
Really? Of all things?
I'm not.
Is it because it's picture driven?
That, and because honestly, my time, mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of time. So mm-hmm. actually, I am looking for like a content creator.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't have time to manage all of those and mm-hmm. do all the other things that I do. Mm-hmm. And then if they want to reach me, I can be reached at Intersystems Rocks, InterSystemsRocks at gmail.com. And you can even look up Intersystems with a website. I don't know why you're doing that. And then the podcast, Unapologetically, not just free, but free indeed. Yay. We're on 11 directories now. Yeah. Or you can go to freeindeed.live or angelinedean.com.
Amazon Music, Blueberry, Deezer, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Podbean, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, Radio Public, Spotify, and TuneIn. Wasn't that impressive that I haven't remembered?
Yeah, yeah, really, right. really was. Mm-hmm, that's why you're the producer. Mm-hmm. That's why you
there
do
you go,
this
baby
stuff.
Girl. There you
look
go.
Look at here, look at here. I know whose house I'm in. Yes. So I'm all right with that. Can I just end by saying this? I was laughing when you keep calling me controversial because I had a colleague call me the other day and they was like, you know, we're not supposed to talk to you. Because
let me guess, were they white?
No, they were black.
They were black.
And so they said, we're not supposed to talk to you. And let me just say this too. That's like crazy. I had white folks.
I have
in
so
school,
many questions.
In my grad school, we had a couple of white folks that was on the bandwagon. And so yeah, so he was like, you know, I'm not supposed to talk to you. So I couldn't stop laughing. Right. So I was like, well, what are you, five? Like, what is going on here? And so they were like, yeah, Dr. Zion, she doesn't like us. That's the one I call Kane.
Are you allowed to say her name?
Huh?
Are you allowed to say
her
name?
To take her name out?
No, I don't care about that. Oh, I'm going to say her name in a lot of other spaces. Oh, okay. I'm going to call all their names out.
Well, okay. I don't care, whatever. Okay.
Right, so that's right. What, see, and this is what an activist does, right? Now, we give you opportunities where we call you into the table. We tell you what's happening. We tell you how it's infecting, and effecting people's lives, the policies. And when you know what you're doing and consciously keep doing it, then it's all.
There's no excuse, right?
Absolutely. Right. So once we call you in and you know what you're doing and you want to keep doing it, then we'll have no problems calling you out. That's right, what an activist does, right?
Oh, I think I'm an activist.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, so that's what I was told. So when you kept saying controversial, I couldn't stop sitting over here like, oh, God, here we go again. But I had one of the counselors at the school. She used to call me oppositional.
It seems more.
But opposition, yeah. So that was a deficit-based framing that she was saying about me.
So that's
right?
negative.
Absolutely. It sounds negative.
Very negative. Very, very, very negative. If you really look that up in academia.
I don't see the word as being a bad word.
Well, oppositional. It's like you're argumentative. It's like you're taking the position over here against something else.
Well, how about pugilistic? Is that negative?
Yeah, well, yeah, because
you're
fighting.
That's negative too?
You
want to fight. But when you said oppositional, right? Like, so to me, although I knew she meant it in a negative way, because when you really break that down and look it up from an academia standpoint, it is very, very negative what she was saying about me. Oh, and so on my shirt, when I walked across the stage, I had oppositional, hell yeah, right on the back.
Wait a second. You on the stage.
When you graduated.
When I graduated.
So when you graduated, this is before they handed you the PhD, the actual documentation. Mm-hmm. You had this written on the back of
your
garment.
Robe?
So on my hat, I had all 1619 project. Oh, I had all kinds of stuff on my hat because I wanted people to know where
you
I was.
You see, this
I
is why you get into trouble. This is why. And then you wonder why people don't like you.
I don't wonder why people don't like me. I don't care. I don't. Yeah. I don't.
You should
sleep
understand
well in
that
night.
Position.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. So that was it. So he was like, so I said, are you serious? He was like, yeah, you're too controversial. So when they kept telling me at school that some of us didn't fit, right? Mm-hmm. Like your work doesn't fit. You just may not fit. You might not be a good fit.
This is at school, not on your job.
No, this is at the school that I'm paying for.
I was just going to say that you're paying
that
to
you're
go to.
Paying.
Yes.
I don't understand. But okay, go ahead.
But so after a while, I was like, okay, well, sometimes, you know, people, it might not be a good fit. That's what I'm thinking. But when you keep hearing it and mm-hmm. you see the people that they're saying it about, and I talk about this in my dissertation. So I started doing research and I said, I need to know what academia means by not fitting. And not fitting means that you will not conform to the status quo, that you will assimilate, that you will acculturate, that you will not rock the boat. All of these things is what they want you to fit. That's how some of them get their tenure mm-hmm. in certain spaces. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, okay, well, I'm cool with that because I don't want to be the status quo.
Right. What's so funny is about that term and about the whole thing about fitting in. Like, people are so much about, I'm unique. I want to be. I was thinking about this past couple of days, that these kids that do these extreme things to be different, but yet, you know, you're not being different. You're just fitting into another group. Mm-hmm. Doing all that doesn't make you different. Mm-hmm. Doing what you believe in your heart and staying true to that, no matter what everyone else is doing, is what makes you different. And right. maybe you might agree or disagree with other people, but you still can stand alone in your individuality.
Right. I tell people all the time, justice costs. Can you handle the cost?
Exactly.
Can you pay the cost?
That's right.
Right. If Jesus was the first social justice organizer, mm-hmm. he paid a cost.
Yes, he did.
Martin Luther King paid a cost.
Yes.
Malcolm X, Fred Hampton, all of them paid mm-hmm. a cost. Right?
Well, the Bible says, count the cost, you know, before you decide to embark on something.
I'm going
to
tell you, Christine, I used to didn't like that scripture. It was one of the scriptures. Yeah. One of them, I was like, I don't like that scripture.
Yeah. 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 But there is a cost. And I mean, you know, it's a cost to anything that you pursue.
Yes.
That isn't just status quo.
And that has mm-hmm. value.
Yeah, anything that mm-hmm. has value is really going to cost you. Whether it's pursuing a business that you want to be a successful entrepreneur, that mm-hmm. costs something.
That's right. right.
Mm-hmm. If you want a job and you want to put in your hours and punch your clock and go home and get your insurance and your 401k mm-hmm. and all that, and just, you know, go home, watch TV and do it all again the next day, there's a cost to that too.
That's yeah. right. That's right.
And it's fine. And you could do that.
But there's a cost to what you choose, you know?
And the cost doesn't only affect you, too. It affects other people as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. yeah. we're not living in isolation.
Right.
By the yes. way, podcast, if you go to freeindeed.live, click on video, because you'll see two videos that Angeline Dean did, part one and part two. You know what the name of this video is?
No.
The Whiteness. Mm-hmm. Of Academia and the Making of a Slave. You know how she spells academia?
No.
She spells it AKKKEDEMIA.
I mean, I was a teacher in mm-hmm. A Catholic school, and it was fine. I wasn't my forte, but I did it. But as far as colleges go and higher education, I feel like some of it's a scam. I really do.
Oh, absolutely.
I really do. And I feel like kids that feel like they have to get into certain schools and you have to get certain degrees and mm-hmm. stuff like that, like we talked about at the beginning, and they put themselves into debt. I don't know.
The things that they allow themselves to go through, mm-hmm. right? I did one study, or I was reading one study and in my research work, and reading how people were allowing themselves to be denigrated mm-hmm. because they were at such and such a school.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, also, we have to have a serious conversation around suicide on mm. these campuses, especially with our younger children. In my dissertation, there was a young woman, and I'm sorry her name escapes me now, but in the dissertation, I had like a moment of silence because she was bullied. She was told that she was less than. She was all of these different things, and she winds up committing suicide. Mm-hmm. So some of the reasons why I do what I do is because I also want parents mm-hmm. to know where you're sending your children.
Right.
And I did the Whiteness of Academia, AKKK, because how academia was built was off KKK principles. I developed what I call an oppression plantation paradigm, because it's really the title of my dissertation is The Whiteness of Academia and the Making of a Slave, a Non-Traditional Black Girl's Journey of the Plantation. As she screams, I was never down with OPP, the oppression plantation paradigm that sought to equate my black body to other people's property. So that's what I saw there. And again,
you saw this in your college experience.
In my grad school experience, okay. Yeah, I did. And again, the people who came for me the most look like me. And this is a gap in literature that this is why they fought me so hard, because they don't want me to talk about this, mm-hmm. right? And I think about the hypocrisy of bringing me in. I was bought in because I was an activist organizer. I was the first one bought in for that reason. And then you told me to be quiet and you can't talk about the oppressors. You could talk about the oppression, but you can't call out or say anything about the oppressor.
So were they bringing you in to silence you?
They were, but one of the women said to me, I've never had a student that knew systems in all my 30 years of teaching the way that you do. So that told me that you thought you were bringing me in to be the little black bobblehead girl who goes into the city and just do what you want me to do, right?
Okay.
And so, and I had just had this happen to me with somebody else before I had even went to school, somebody mm-hmm. who I was consulting for that I had to leave. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are the stories that I tell because, and they fight me about it. Some of them have come against me, like, we don't want you talking about that. But when I saw how
what happened to freedom of speech?
What happened? I thought this was education.
Yeah. Isn't that where you go to find
yes.
the voice?
Yeah. And when I tell you that's a major gap, which is why I want to publish the book, the dissertation, because it is a major, major gap. And even coming here today, when I was on the phone, I was talking about how we're going to start doing some of these studies because I'm not alone. When I look at what has happened to other people, like it's the research says that how the people are affected. One of the girls in our sphere of the whole program, she wound up with Bell's palsy. Another one got really, really sick. Like mm-hmm. you all this stuff you internalize, mm-hmm. right? And so that's
women,
why
especially, I think, do so more.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just look at it from that aspect. And then when I saw, you know, and when I had black women coming at me like, you're not supposed to talk about this. You're not supposed to say this. So if a white snake bites me, I can talk about it. But if a black snake bites me, I have to be quiet. Mm. And the beauty, what they didn't know if about me is, and until the end, and I kept it that way until the end. And what I said to them was, what you don't know is I have a white grandmother and a black grandmother. Mm-hmm. And if either of them abused me, I'm going to tell my mom. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no, right, right. There's no pick one and be quiet, right?
Right, right.
And so what you're doing to us, I'm not going to just stay quiet about. And so at first, some of them came for me. But when the whole episode around Tyre Nichols happened, where the black cops killed the black pedestrian, mm-hmm. and that was all over the news, then I had a couple of them call me and they said, you know what, I see what you mean now. And mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, we have to talk about this, because in academia we'll be willing to talk about the police, but what happens if some of you that look like me, what happens if you wore body cameras? What would we hear? Mm-hmm. What would we see? How are you killing and murdering us? How mm-hmm. are you victimizing us? Mm-hmm.
So that's
what makes me controversial.
I was going to say, are you going to be publishing something soon? And I think you answered that.
Yeah. So the dissertation, I put an embargo on there, and I did it intentionally where people can't read it right now because okay. I want to publish it. And then there's a couple other things, publications.
Can you say what school this is that you went to?
Rowan University in Glassboro.
Rowan. I've heard a lot about Rowan.
Really?
A lot of people mm-hmm. I know went
there.
I
think this was Princeton. Mm-mm. I just had it in my head. It was Princeton.
I know, I did too. Why do we think that?
I don't know. I can't stand Princeton. This should be a happening little town.
Look, I don't have anything against Princeton. I just feel like it's a rarefied air. And huh? It's what? Like, you know, it's just a certain, you know.
Rarefied air?
Yeah, like it's
elitist.
Like.
Elitist.
Yeah, it feels like you have to be, I don't know. I just.
Wait, I'm all for elitism. I don't understand what rarefied air means.
I'm for elitism for everybody.
Yes. I just don't, for everybody.
When I mean elite, I mean.
I'm like, okay.
Listen, when I say elite, I mean, my definition is excellence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's when I mean elite. I know elite has different connotations. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. elite could be like, I'm better and you're not. That's elite too. But,
yeah. but that's how these schools are ranked, mm-hmm. right? Princeton, mm-hmm. Harvard,
right.
Yale, right? It's an elitist ranking
that
they're superior mm-hmm. to the other ones.
Right. And I think what I feel like when I go to Princeton is I don't fit in. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is not my, I mean, I don't feel like, ooh, I just feel like I don't fit in, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to stay.
Right.
we're just gonna make our own thing out of it.
I like to be a little bit of a, you know,
being annoying.
The piece of sand and the that creates just the pearl.
That's it.
But I don't. I mean, and
the sand that makes the pearl.
I don't think I could ever live in a place like Princeton. It's just too different. Like different, not in variation, different in sameness. Like I don't like it.
The only thing I like about Princeton and places like that is like this exalted feeling they have about themselves. Mm-hmm. I like these because it makes me feel tough. These places.
Feel tough. Well,
I feel like
I mean, I didn't grow up that way. I mean, we grew up. It's funny. I was like really grateful the way I grew up in the place I grew up and the time I grew up. So diverse, really. And I was, you know, I tell the story. I've told it on the air probably a few times. Like last day of school, we were all taking pictures with cameras. I mean, remember the camera with a little flash bulb that you put on it? And we were all taking pictures. And then when I developed the pictures 2 weeks later, you know, I was showing my dad and he's like, excuse the expression. I'm just telling you what he said. Who are these, all these colored boys that you're with? Because that's who I hung out with. And I'm like, they're my friends. And he was like, I don't think my dad grew up in a different time, but he wasn't like, I forbid you to go and see. He wasn't like that. He was just like, why are you always with all these colored boys? I was because this is who were my friends. I mean, I don't know. Just that's who we hung out.
Well, you didn't think anything of it.
No, I didn't. Because we were all in the same school. We all came from the same neighborhood. We were all...
This is Brooklyn, New York in the 70s, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole different... Brooklyn's not the same, like...
No, no, I know. It's a different time.
It was like when it was really...
When I was graduating from grammar school, it was 1974. Okay. Right, so, yeah, so 74. So I'm grateful for that upbringing, because when I'm in a more rarefied air, I feel not like, oh, this isn't my place.
I like... Not my cup of tea.
It's not my cup of tea. Yeah. That's more a better... way to say it.
So
it's
back to rarefied air for 1 minute. The dictionary calls rarefied air as being extremely high or elevated, lawfully exalted, the rarefied atmosphere of a scholarly symposium.
That could describe Princeton, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I think they just fool themselves. I think that they're very impressed with themselves.
That kind of goes with it, you know, like, whatever.
I don't like it.
Well, that's not where I went. Mine was...
Yeah, in Rowan. But still, it was...
Racist Rowan.
Great.
Good old racist Rowan. But you didn't even think about when it was Glassboro.
Felt like this by Trent Wave producers and Steph. Listen,
but if you look at the history of Glassboro State College, there was a lot of racism during that time.
That school changed. Listen, we have good friends. Shout out to Family Life Christian Fellowship and Larry Clark and the whole gang. We love you. See you soon. He had his church right in the middle of what is now Rowan University. It's not there anymore. They moved to a different space.
Yeah.
But when we started first going there and ministering with him, it was not like it is today. Like it was a real small school. And then like within a couple of years, it just started like, oh, what's here? Like different restaurants and shops. And I guess it built up around the kids that were going there. So they must have done a great marketing campaign because they brought in
that and money. Political, right? We know that education is politics too. Yeah. So if you follow the money and who some of these buildings being named after and all that kind of stuff, it'll tell you who's persuading their pockets, right? Mm-hmm. That whole thing.
Well, how do you explain South Auditorium?
I would never, never give money to a university or a college.
Yeah.
There are other places I would give my money.
Oh, I would never. I wouldn't give a dime.
I stand corrected. There is a university I will give my money to.
Oh, Sprout University.
Sprout University. That's never heard of Sprout University? Mm-hmm. It's
different because that's a real university.
That's a real university.
These other fake political racists.
Listen, I want to actually keep it positive. Okay. Just a shout out to Sprout University. Yes. They are doing fantastic work. As we speak, they have a group of kids who are on a little excursion for the week.
Nice.
Kids don't have to pay for anything. Their parents could come with them. They just get to experience time out in the woods. I think they're camping or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know, something like that. They're doing something wonderful. So, and that's what they do all the time. Like they take ballet classes, they go on point, they have musicians, they have artists. I just love them.
Yeah, I'm going to do something with the kids, maybe this fall. Paula Bethea, the principal right here in Trenton, because mm-hmm. they're doing a lot around civics and civic education.
Good. Good.
So I got to give a shout out to Ms. Bethea. She does some great work.
There are good things happening in the city.
Absolutely.
Really good things.
Absolutely. So, Frank, hopefully you don't think that I hate all white people.
Nah, I guess not.
Yeah. So I think it's funny, you know, I'm too black for some, not black enough for others.
You're way too black for me. You're too black for my tastes.
Power to the people.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, I'm with you. Peace. Rock and roll.
Power to the people.
Here's the other thing. There's one thing I don't trust about Danielle, who won Sprout University.
What is that?
Oh, Lord.
Is her choice of having me as a board member.
Yeah, that's questionable for sure. Very sure.
You're fine. I do not understand why she has me on. I think I'm just, I come with the package.
Well, you're good. You're good technical. So, like, you work on the website. You can do some videotaping, maybe some marketing for her.
Thank you.
It would be great. Because sometimes I say that name, people are like, what's that? I'm like,
what? How have you not heard of Sprout?
How do you not know about this wonderful place? So, in your thoughts of Trenton, mm-hmm. and as you imagine Trenton, what would be your dream Trenton? What would it look like?
And one of my prayers is that people will be exposed for who they are. I pray that all the time for this city. I think that my dream Trenton would be almost what we're talking about now, right? That they would obtain the knowledge that they need to move forward and not associate them with people politically because they're my friend. Mm. Because sometimes they're not your friend. In the grand scheme of things, again, people wear these masks. For me, an outsider looking in who has been doing work here since what, like 2011, 12, something like that. And I'm looking to see where the major changes are. And the only changes I see are government. But then I question how much change. The mm-hmm. faces are changing, are the politics changing? Mm-hmm. And so what I'm grateful for is that I do believe that there are a group of people who are now waking up. Mm-hmm. And the scales are coming off their eyes to see. So that's what I just would love to see: true equity, true mm-hmm. healing, mm-hmm. True community healing and communal healing. That would be my dream, Trenton.
Cool. Very cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Remember, podcast, stay tuned right after this interview for a special launch podcast of Unapologetically Not Just Free, but Free Indeed. Anjali's first guest, Miss Stephanie Register. That's right. The Spitfire herself. Well, that just about does it for this episode of Trenton Waves.
Sasso's out.
You've been listening to the Trenton Waves podcast. Visit us online at trentonwaves.com.
I really gotta ask, is we truly free of the chains from the past and passed down in legacy? Have we readily given up dreams? Dr. Angeline Dean delves into what that means to be black and up. Does acting out of pocket mean we black enough? Or is that the system that hates when we different makes being pro-black seem like a hate mission? It's not. Let's stir the pot. We study the plot and talk about a lot. Unapologetically not just free, but free indeed. With Dr. Angeline Dean.
Greetings, unapologetically free indeed family. I am so ecstatic today because I get the distinct honor and pleasure of bringing in this next guest, Stephanie Register. Now, this little thing is about 5-something, but she is a power pack of dynamite. And so today, as you know, as we talk about being, what does free indeed means? That whole deed portion is, how are we resetting? How are we decoding ourselves from this space of whiteness as property, from this space of learning and unlearning what we need to know? So today we're going to talk about planning. We're going to talk about urban planning. We're going to bring some history to the light. We're going to look at land versus property. Two different things, yet one. So I am so excited. I introduce to some, present to others, none other than Stephanie Register. Ooh. Hey, Steph.
Hey, Dr. Dean. How are you this afternoon?
I am phenomenal, sis. What's good?
Man, look at here. I am just so grateful to be on this platform with you. This is exciting. I'm really happy. I'm kind of a little nervous, but, you know, I know once we start speaking, it's going to be, like, very volume.
Yes. Because we have these kind of conversations as if we're on a podcast all the time.
All day long. This is exciting. So, you know, awesome. And especially on this nice rainy afternoon, too.
Yes.
Be home or what have you.
Shout outs to Joyce Russell on this morning. Happy 81st birthday, yes, beautiful.
Russell, happy birthday.
And she called me today. I told her what I was going to be talking about today. And she said, can you guys make it like on a kindergarten level?
Oh, we can make this as elementary as possible. Because you know what? I don't even like talking. You know how I am. You're a doctor. I'm a planner. And, you know, sometimes we get in these scholarly conversation. I'm like, wait a minute. Let's break this down some. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people, I don't care who you are.
That's right.
Everyone is not where we are or where, you know, some people, other people are. So they're like, okay, what is planning? Mm-hmm. You know, and what is zoning? What are all of these aspects of why we have to do planning and zoning in these communities? Mm-hmm. Well, these are acts that were actually enacted in the 1920s.
Okay.
And these acts were actually put together to stabilize communities, one, mm-hmm. but also
come on.
To police communities.
Okay.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And something that you and I speak about all the time is, especially when we're talking about African-Americans,
mm-hmm.
where were they in the 20s?
Mm-hmm.
Where were that? What was that community doing in the 20s? But let's go back to the Reconstruction era.
Okay, I was getting ready to say, let's go prior to that.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, let's even go basic, right? Because,
okay.
Queen Mother, I got to listen to Queen Mother.
Amen.
Right? So when we talk about urban planners, right, mm-hmm. and the responsibility and what your job actually is. Because, see, you had me doing homework late last night. So I was like, okay, because this girl is smart. And I was like, okay, let me look up what this is.
But I'm with a smart lady, too. So, you know, I had to act like I know.
We just a mere reflection of one another, sis.
That's right.
So when we look at what urban planners, what do? They develop land use plans and programs mm-hmm. that help create communities, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Accommodate population growth, which
exactly.
I've heard you say several times when looking at different things like, okay, this is going to make our population grow. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
And they're also responsible for revitalizing like physical facilities in certain spaces. Is that correct?
Right.
Do I have that?
Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, we look at the regulatory processes and the management of towns and cities and metropolitan regions.
Okay.
So we look at the whole aspect of how do you plan and develop communities.
Okay.
Also looking at the population aspect of it.
Okay.
You know, and there's several specifics of planning. We got land use, which is one of my specialties.
Okay.
Which is actually looking at the regulatory of land and how it is described in districts.
Okay.
Such as residential, business, commercial, industrial zones. Mm-hmm. I'm explaining why, you know, why we have to have these particular zone districts. Because I get a lot of calls, well, is my house zoned this? And I'm like, what district are you in?
Okay.
You know, because we don't want to identify parcels by spot zoning. We want to identify parcels through districting. As I said, residential, commercial, industrial,
mm-hmm.
places of that type of commodity development.
When people say the ward, is the ward a district?
No, the ward is a ward.
Okay, so what's the difference between the words?
The difference between both words is one is actually more political to actually give you the boundaries of what a district is as far as the electoral process is. And then with zoning, you have a district, which is the name of a district. When we're talking about residential,
mm-hmm.
that's within maybe a district within a ward.
Okay.
So let's take Trent, for instance. We have North, East, South, and West Ward, right?
Mm-hmm.
But within those particular wards, you have different zone districts.
Okay.
Then the districts are identified through what we call a land use ordinance, which is today our zoning ordinance.
Okay.
Those districts are identified within those wards. So I live in the West Ward. Yes, I am a Trentonian. I live mm-hmm. in the West Ward.
Mm-hmm.
But I live in a ward, the district called RB2, Residential B2.
Okay.
Which is has its own identification according to our zone regulations.
Okay.
And you can find our zoning regulations on the city website.
Okay.
So it gets very intricate. I always tell people, please look up, you know, find out, do your research. Mm-hmm. Find out which zone you're in within that particular ward.
So that would be like even the urban enterprise zone in some spaces,
well,
right?
Well, that's what you call a special zone. That's not what we would call as a land use. Some of these areas are identified as special zones, like a special improvement district, which is in a downtown area. Urban enterprise zone, UEZ, inside, maybe in the North Ward, within a particular bounded area, but it's still not the zone of that particular area. It's called a special project of that zone. So all of these particular regulatory processes get very intricate.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it's important to actually ask the planner or ask the zoning officer, you know, that's actually in charge of those particular areas, so you can get that information.
Okay.
And we find it very, 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 very non-conducive when people go ahead and start doing something within a particular area without asking. Mm-hmm. And they find out, wait a minute, why did I get this fine? Well, there's regulatory processes that we all have to adhere to. And it's going back to what you were saying. Do we understand what laws are? Do we understand what those acts are? Do we understand what those statutes are?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important for us, especially in communities that have been unresourced, mm-hmm. to understand why we're in this particular area. But let's go back a little bit.
I was going to say, so when I looked up zoning, which you just basically defined, right? It said municipal or local laws or regulations that govern how real property can and cannot be used in a geographic area.
Exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you spoke about ordinances. And so I said, let me look up that as well, right? It's a local law given by a particular municipality. It's like an order.
Right. And it's, you know, and it's done by our legislative body. For us in the city of Trenton, we have what we call our city council.
Right.
So ordinances and resolutions are pretty much made up by those legislative particular bodies within that municipality.
Okay. So then that would, now I want to just go back again, right? So when we're talking about that, really what I hear also is the Faulkner Act, right? So the Faulkner Act basically is four plans of government, right? How your city is going to be situated to be governed.
Right.
And that's the mayor council, council manager, small municipality, or the mayor council administrator.
And all of that is actually, again, based on the political engine. Right?
Yes.
But then we never hear about the zoning and or planning acts that are comprised as part of that governmental system.
Yes.
Which is very important. Yeah. So we have our council. We have what we call our Faulkner Act, which is our governing position. But we never talk about these other commissions and boards, which actually comprise and make up that Faulkner positioning that we decided to be a part of, like mayor council, lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're talking, let's go back a little bit.
Okay.
As I was speaking to you before, when we're talking about planning and zoning, when these regulatory processes were enacted, they were enacted in the 20s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I want to ask the question, where was the African-American community?
Okay, just for clarity, are you saying 1920s,
1820s? 1920s.
Okay.
The 1920s, because I'm going to go back, go back just a little bit more.
Okay.
At one point, right after the true emancipation in 1865, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, between 1865, we had the Reconstruction era to 1877.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, this was an opportunity for African Americans, the descendants of slaves, were able to actually go and actually set up communities of their own because of what they learned, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this was a 14-year time frame where African Americans were able to live freely until what?
Mm-hmm.
Until they were decimated by white America. And I say that only because of the political system that was put in place, because we're going to talk about this, Dr. Dean.
Come on.
How does property own property?
Because when we became the three-fifths, we were never human, right?
Right.
When we came over here.
And I'm going somewhere with
as
this,
enslaved people.
Right.
We were never considered people. We were considered that owned.
Right.
And I want to give a shout out to Dr. Cheryl Harris.
Yes.
If you ever read the article Whiteness as Property, that talks about how black bodies were legalized
property.
Right, right.
And so when you and I speak about this all the time, like we're talking about amending the 13th, we're talking about the 19th Amendment, we're talking about the 15th
right.
Amendment.
That's right.
All of these particular quote-unquote laws that are still on the books.
That's right. Laws, constitutions, all of that.
Yes. So, you know, when we're talking about these particular enactments and statutes and all that great stuff, we never think about these are true laws that we still have to abide by.
Mm-hmm. And let's be real clear that some of these laws are still on the books.
They're still on the books. They're not right. amended. They're That's still right. on the books. They're still there.
That's right.
So from that time, from 1865 to 1877, we were in the Reconstruction era, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then Jim Crow comes.
I was getting ready to say Jim Crow comes.
Mm-hmm. And then from 1877 to 1965, which the year I was born, we were under Jim Crow rule.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going back to the 20s when planning and zoning was enacted. Again, I always ask this question, where was the African-American community?
Mm-hmm.
Where was the descendants of slaves.
Mm-hmm.
So we come, let's fast forward it to now.
And let's say the descendants of the enslaved.
Okay.
Okay.
We can say that.
Yes, please.
So now we're fast forwarding to now and we have certain cities that have been zoned
mm-hmm.
and zoning has been used as a police power at one point against our particular community.
Okay. So then if we even go back further and we talk about the history of policing,
mm-hmm.
right? The history of policing began as slave catchers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's how policing actually started. So now we're watching, as we're listening to you, we're watching how policing and surveillance grew
and how communities, especially black and brown communities, became contained environments.
Because we think of communities as the spaces where we reside.
Mm-hmm.
But communities are systemic structures.
They are systemic structures.
And we have to start look, it is in my opinion, that we have to start looking at defining them mm-hmm. as structures, because structures have laws, they have statutes, they have policies,
right.
They have all of these things that govern the people in them.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly. So when you have a community that has not been one participatory of the process,
yes.
What are you dealing with? You're dealing with all those traumas that we deal with. You're dealing with what we call products of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So when I hear people talk about, oh, why don't black people pull up their bootstraps? I'm like, wait a minute, they didn't have it. They were taken. They were decimated.
And some of them, you cut your foot off. So
exactly.
They couldn't even put their foot
you
in
know,
the
boot. So there's a social mindset here that when we're talking about redeveloping communities, we got to look at it from a holistic perspective.
Absolutely.
And look at it from also a historic perspective.
Yes.
How do we begin to disband all of those things that were put in place
mm-hmm.
to actually keep a community in a space where they cannot thrive or develop or build their own wealth.
And I love that you said disband.
Very honest about that. Yes.
Because we're always talking about transform.
Right.
But how do you transform when you don't know the history to know
exactly.
how to disband?
So when I
right?
became a planner, I didn't know anything about planning. At the time when I actually passed the planning law test and all that good stuff, went back to school, had
mm-hmm.
to get my paycheck garnished because I was an old child by the time I went back to school. You know, and learning about planning. Believe
like
it or not, I was the only black woman on staff as a planner.
Oh,
I
believe it.
And so a lot of this information didn't come. And I found out that only at the point when I became one, it was only 6% people of color.
Mm-hmm.
were planners.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow. But again, when I looked at the history, I saw the reason why.
Yes.
And once you see the reason why, you begin to say, okay, now I can understand how I can navigate this system.
Mm-hmm.
One, to assist and help those to help understand why we have planning, why we have zoning,
mm-hmm.
why at one point zoning is used as a police power over certain communities.
Because mm-hmm.
it all boils down to power. It all boils down to capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it
control.
All control.
That's right.
And again, it goes back to that question of how does property own property?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we don't, and especially in our community, a lot of us, yeah, we were allowed to be in the political arena, but this other arena over here of owning property,
mm-hmm.
understanding what ownership means is completely different.
So what I really hear you saying, which I talked about the other day too, is we're so busy concentrating, and this is my own thought process, on becoming empowered. Versus becoming power.
Or having power.
Absolutely.
Power.
Well, that's what I mean when
yes.
I say becoming power. And Malcolm taught us that,
yeah.
right? Like, okay, let's empower, but I need you to walk in power.
Walk in
and
power.
Those structures.
And
yes.
you know, when Richard Rothstein wrote his book, The Color of Law,
mm-hmm.
that was expository for me.
Mm-hmm.
I began to look at it this guy who actually sat on every, you know, he's part of the Economic Policy Institute, but he sat on, you know, upper echelon for the NAACP, white Jewish guy who literally took the information from a historic perspective and brought it right into land use today, noting the different systemic measures that were put in place to keep certain groups down because of economic power.
And when you look at that, right, where this show derives from, right, and I've said it before, it's because of my dissertation, and looking not just at the intersectionality of systems, but the interconnectionality of these systems. And so when you look at what his book talked about, how that transcends into the educational system, because we're still looking at de jure and de facto laws.
Exactly. And it's more or less like, I mean, I was, you know, putting a bunch of students today, and one of the things that I found out, I asked them, I said, do you guys know what planning is? And none of them raised their hand. But then when I speak, I'm like, "What? How are we actually helping our young adults, our young babies understand the educational component of what they can learn? Planning, zoning, architecture, engineer, all of those things that make up, I would say, the boundaries, the perimeters of developing neighborhoods, you know? How do we actually put that information out there? And you and I, we, you know, we talk about this all the time, and how we get so embedded in these particular systems, you know. But again, how do we disband a system that's literally been webbed for so long? It's kind of mind-boggling, but I do believe that it can be done, because we have to go back. We have to begin to challenge. We have to begin to advocate for our rights again. And in this time of Black Lives Matter and all that good stuff, yes, it's great. I ain't gonna lie. For me, I said it's a day late and a dollar short. Our fathers, our advocates, Martin Luther King and all of Malcolm X, and, you know, we talked about our Fred guys, Hampton, Fred Hampton, and all them. They were all murdered. They were murdered. They weren't, you know, all of a sudden died on a natural cause. They were murdered. Why were they murdered? Because, again, how do you keep a certain system in place to keep power over?
That's right. And they were murdered because they were educating their communities, and they were hitting in the pockets. Right? The economic piece, right?
I mean, even if you look at Black elitism today, I mean, we talk about that too. You know, the ones
it's
that
alive
know,
and real.
The ones that know still want to keep that power over. But again, it goes back to those systemic measures that were put in place back in the early 1800s, 1700s, 16, let's go back 1700s, 1800s now. And even, you know, the 3-year spans between the emancipation and Juneteenth, you know, that time frame. And then now we're talking about, you know, the Reconstruction era to Jim Crow and how Jim Crow lasted so long.
My whole thing, I'm still stuck on the whole elitist, because I am so over it. You know, some of these conversations that we have with us.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting. I had a conversation before I came here. One of my friends, she just received this dean's position, right, at this university. And she teaches at this, quote unquote, affluent, right, right now.
I'm not laughing.
University. No. So she was saying to me how she was sharing the news about where she was going. And this university where she's going is predominant. It's not a HBCU, but it is a minority serving institution or minoritized serving institution. And she was like, you know, I had to come to myself and really admit to myself that what some of my own are saying to me is, why are you leaving this affluent for that place? Right? And I was like, I said, you know, sis, you had to see who they are in your circle before you go to your next.
Well, you and I speak about this all the time. You know, it's the whole perpetuation of conditioning. You know what I mean? It goes over and over again. We can go back to being enslaved and what was taught to us being enslaved from language all the way to physical abuse, to mental, all of those abuses that happen. All right, my master beat me. The master, and if he couldn't do it, he got the overseer to do it. And then we come and we all, and you know how I feel about this, hurt people hurt people. So the conditioning over and over again, the socialization of that happening over and over again. So now today, it's the same process. Oh, I have, so guess what? I'm going to be good over here, and I'm going to let you do what you do because I don't think you're worth it. We Professor A. Lee Johnson, in validation to the utmost.
Ooh, and what you just said too was right. Some of us were those overseers.
Yes.
So I'm more elitist than you are because I'm up here and you're the other, right?
The brown paper bag.
The subjugated other, absolutely. And so I said to her, I said, isn't it funny that some of those same people will write and publish all these great journals and all this kind of stuff, but yet they don't realize that when they come serve their own, their thought process that they really have, but yet we talk about those who want to be our Santa Clauses.
Right.
But sis, you're doing the same thing to us.
You're doing the same thing. And so, you know, and let's be mindful here. You know, I have been called a racist and I'm like, no, I'll never be a racist. I don't have the money. I don't have the power.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something that we can identify. It is called discriminative practices and discrimination and prejudice, in which we all can have.
Absolutely.
But a racist,
biases, all
no,
of it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, property cannot own property.
Mm-hmm.
Until we figure out a way how we can amend that constitution that's on the table,
mm-hmm.
so that we can begin to rechannel and, like I said, disband a lot of the lies.
Yes.
You know?
Well, that's why we're going to have Phoebo on here. Dennis Phoebo on here.
Yes,
and he's going to talk about the whole Amend the 13th movement.
That's going to be awesome because we need to understand that. And we need to understand it from people who are doing their true research.
Absolutely. And traveling nationally
Doing
it. And shout outs to the National ACLU.
Amen.
Who have gotten on board and said, yes, how do we put this on the ballot where we say that black people are no longer 3/5 of a person?
Right.
How do we amend the 13th so that they're not considered enslaved if they have to go to jail or
so
something
goes
like
that? It goes back to understanding, again, now we're shooting up to the 20s again,
mm-hmm.
in 1920s, and all of a sudden we have these police powers, these enactments of planning and zoning,
mm-hmm.
and all this stuff going on again. I always say, where were we? Where mm-hmm. was us?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And when I became a planner, you know, my focus was I was thrown into the zoning. I was thrown into land use. Didn't know anything about it, but it began to resonate like, wow, we really have regulatory practices and laws on the books that this is how you zone an area,
mm-hmm.
and why you can and cannot build and do certain things within a particular area.
Mm-hmm.
But then I began to parlay that with housing and also community planning.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, I felt like, well, you can't just do land use without looking at the socialization of the population that's on the land. And I was really like, you know, astounded that those two were not hand in hand. We were doing mm-hmm. all this great development, but were we socializing or looking at the population in which we were building
mm-hmm.
for? Not building, but building for that population.
Mm-hmm.
And so my
because the structure said, I have the authority and the power to put on there what I want on there without the voices of the people.
Right. And democratically, you know, we have these things in place. We have these stuff in place. And I say things, for lack of a better word, right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have what we call planning board and zoning board.
Mm-hmm.
But if, again, if certain communities are not privy to the information, who makes up those particular boards?
Right.
And so we can say democratically, oh, we are doing things in a democratic process.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if certain communities are not privy to that process,
mm-hmm.
then who has the power over them to do so?
Which is why this show is important.
I think this show is really important.
Yes.
I think it's excellent. So, you know, I'm looking at, all right, now I started as a land use planner. Now I'm looking at it from a social, housing, and community perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But we have other specialties of planning. We have transportation planning.
That's right.
We have environmental planning.
Mm-hmm.
We have economic development planning.
Mm-hmm.
All of those aspects of planning, which comprise all of us together sitting in a room saying, okay, how are we going to look at, you know, certain areas in which we would plan. Right now, we're looking at the city of Trenton.
Mm-hmm.
Had the opportunity back in 2017 to actually work on developing Trenton 250 master plan
mm-hmm.
with then the supervisor planner Jeffrey Wilkerson, which I don't mind saying because it was actually a great process,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we all were in this together, developing a process, an overarching theme
mm-hmm.
for the city of Trenton, which I thought was awesome because
mm-hmm.
it included not just infrastructure development, it also included how do we actually get people to use
mm-hmm.
the particular aspects of a plan to be implemented within their neighborhoods. And that was exciting for me.
I can imagine.
It was so
exciting. It's funny because I remember one of my comp questions dealt with urban, what does urban mean or something like that, right? And I remember my professors asking me, why do you always spell holistic with a W?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you can't heal, right? If you don't, if you just spell it with an H, holistic, you can't heal without the W bringing the whole to create the whole. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's what I hear you saying is we have to look at this in a holistic.
It's like a computer system. Mm-hmm. You cannot really work on a computer system without the software. Right.
Right. Right. So it's like dependent upon each other.
It has to. Yes. So you have a building, you create this great building. Who needs to use the building? Mm-hmm. It's human beings. Right. That's just software.
Right.
So, you know, and I've seen it all. I literally have seen it all. I mean, I even had the opportunity to, like, study a part of this in Dusseldorf, Germany, which is in Amsterdam, which mm-hmm. is, like, some of the most wonderful places to look at urban planning. Mm-hmm. And when I was over there and I looked how, since World War II, a lot of this devastation from the war, their communities were decimated. Mm-hmm. But how they rebuilt those particular communities was amazing. Mm-hmm. And they built it around that environment, around the socialization of their population. Mm-hmm. And so over here in America, because racism is embedded more so over here and mm-hmm. how it's built, we actually learn how to build without the socialization of our population. Mm-hmm. So today, I believe because of natural disasters and, you know, all unseemly things, especially since 9/11, we're learning how to look at that a little bit more emphatic so that we can begin to build mm-hmm. around our socialization of our population. mm-hmm. And it's exciting for me because, again, I'm a new planner. I'm an old person, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Oh, Lord. But I'm a new planner. But this is exciting because now we get the opportunity to really build our community around the socialization of who we are as a population. Mm-hmm. And that's looking at every ethnic group. That's looking at all the cultures within mm-hmm. them. And mm-hmm. that's exciting for me because now we look at Trenton, who is 7.5 square miles, mm-hmm. who have the opportunity of 150,000 people to live here. We're slowly inching back, mm-hmm. but we have that opportunity. So how do we build around that? Mm-hmm. How do we build around that? And I'm excited about it.
Yeah, we should be.
And especially today, now we're like looking at it from a cultural and ethnic perspective versus what you just state, we're just going to build because we think we know better for these particular people.
And I see this too as restorative.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Right? It's a restorative. If this is what's going to happen, this is a restorative measure mm-hmm. In order to rebuild, restructure, rebrand. Or I'm going to say trans. I hate re because re means the possibility of doing what you did before again. Right. So I'm going to say trans build, transform.
Yes,
right?
Transform.
All like, of that. Know. Yeah, yeah. I hate this re stuff.
Right. I mean, because, you know, when we're talking about planning and zoning, we're looking at urban decay. We looked at how urban decay has literally decimated some communities, urban renewal, all mm-hmm. that good stuff. But again, we have to figure out a better way. And I think this is a great opportunity, too, to talk about it from a historic perspective.
Yeah.
So that we can realize, why did we have to do a Mount Laurel decision? Why did we have to actually, like, you know, why do we actually, are we still there when we're talking about fair housing and all that good stuff? And mm-hmm. what is the difference between affordable housing, subsidized housing, and, you know, how is that being proposed and built?
So I see that as another show to have that conversation as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, because I remember when the attorney called me in Mount Laurel and was like, would you be a part of this lawsuit? And I was like, let's talk about it, right? And so, yeah, absolutely.
So all of this is like so important when we, you know, from this perspective, from the history that we're coming from. So I'm mm-hmm. excited.
All right. We're going to have to stop here and wrap this up. I am your host, Dr. Angeline Dean. You have been listening to Stephanie Register, the world's best urban city.